Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 15th of October, 2020. And we're looking at an interesting session yesterday in the U.S. where we're seeing some more downside. And as you can see on slide one now with this latest sell-off and a bit of the extension in the futures overnight that we're seeing basically wiped out that Monday move. So sort of underlining that point when you see a big acceleration in the price action on top of an already steep rally. It can be a little bit too much too quickly. A little bit less, though, downside in the case of the NASDAQ 100. A couple of the banks reporting yesterday, Goldman Sachs reporting stellar results. They only had a very slightly negative session, but the Wells Fargo and Bank of America reporting reasonably strong results in terms of the headline numbers, but some of the internals and the specifics there spooked investors. So in the Bank of America's case, their trading revenues were very, very sluggish compared to all their peers. And given the massive volatility in equity markets and otherwise. So that was a disappointment. Their shares were down some 6%, as were those for Wells Fargo, where there's a bigger problems afoot there. A billion dollar charge linked to old customer abuse scandals. $700 million expense reported for some restructuring. And then I think a sign of the bad culture at Wells Fargo, there were 100 employees that had to be fired because they were abusing some of the public assistance programs in the COVID-19 response. So just some ugly stuff there. And actually, Wells Fargo, if it closes near current levels, it would be the lowest weekly close for that stock since 2009. So nothing to cheer about there. Earnings season sort of tapers off a little bit today in terms of marquee names. You do have Morgan Stanley reporting today. And next week, though, it really picks up with some of the really big names like Intel, Amazon, Tesla, etc. reporting next week. Actually, let's skip to you, Altea. I think because we've got you in the studio today with some perspective on fixed income. And I just wanted to point out, I've discussed it recently, last couple of podcasts. So the U.S. yields have sort of backed down lower in the case of the Treasuries. I've got on slide five this 10-year yield. We talked a lot about it when it was threatening the 0.75% levels. It seems like some of these round level yield levels can be quite important for market psychology. Now it's back down here, and you're focusing a bit on the shape of the yield curve. And what's your thought here? It just doesn't seem like this whole sort of concerns that the yields are rising, that we're about to see massive inflation hitting the markets. That story is sort of eased off here.
Yes, that's true, John. But what we have seen since the beginning of September until today is that the yield curve has been steepening, and the longer maturities are the ones that have increased in yield the most.
Yeah.
What is very important is that yesterday the New York Fed has released the path of next Treasury purchase for the second half of October. So since June, the Fed is purchasing $80 billion a month of Treasury securities. So we can expect from basically today until the end of the month, the Fed to purchase around $40 billion. Out of those $40 billion, almost half of them are going to go to the belly of the yield curve. So maturity from 2 to 7 years. And we can expect this part to flatten slightly. Only $4 billion are going to go to maturities from 20 to 30 years. So definitely, like, I believe that the long part of the yield curve will continue to stay volatile. And it's the only economic indicator at the moment that will show market sentiment, because the front part of the yield curve basically is controlled by the Fed.
All right, and I've got some. You've got some great charts discussing European yields, and it actually leads me to an interesting thought on the Japanese yen. Strangely enough, even though you're talking about European yields, I'll get to that in a moment. But first, wanted to just cover that the Australian Central Bank, the RBA, was out overnight, or at least the RBA Governor Lowe was out overnight, saying that the bank is considering whether extending its purchases out to the longer end of the yield curve could potentially have an effect on unemployment. They weren't sort of making the dramatic claim that that was the case, but merely airing the issue. Saw a pretty strong movement in Australian yields. So the 10-year, which he complained was at one of the highest levels in the developed market world, dropped from 84 basis points down to 77 basis points overnight. And naturally, the Aussie was under some pressure from this as well. On slide two, you can see the Aussie dollar. You're seeing that moving down lower, sort of breaking that local little consolidation trend line. And the really big focus here will be that 70 level, I think, which will come into view if commodity prices stay sort of low to lower, and if we're seeing a more sort of global bout of weakening risk sentiment far beyond what we've seen so far this week. And then just briefly to round out other FX issues, the sterling very volatile yesterday because we had increased focus, of course, on today's deadline from Boris Johnson on Brexit talks. But he said yesterday that they will not step away from talks today. And it seems clear from both sides. I'm not sure the sources here, but of course, in the most respectable news sources, Bloomberg, etc., is indicating, apparently both sides indicating that they see the late October to very early November timeframe is more likely for a decision. Sterling naturally taking this as a positive sign because there's a sufficient hope in what's the current state is of these talks to delay any decision on walking away for now. But it's going to be hard to see the market wanting to take an aggressive stance still. But of course, all other things equal, this is a positive sterling development. And briefly, just want to note, dollar-yen, while it's still very small trading ranges, hitting that 105 level again. You can see on slide four how massive this level is. It's gone below several times since 2019, I think even before, if I'm recalling correctly, and it just does not stick below that level. It is a key level for that pair. And leads me back to you, Altea, because I was pondering this yesterday as well. Why hasn't the yen been stronger relative to the dollar and relative to the broader market? I think a lot of it is recently this focus on the reflation story, a lot of focus on getting yield enhancement strategies around the world. But specifically for Europe, where actually the real safe haven European yields are even lower than their Japanese counterparts, why hasn't the euro yen gone lower? And ironically, I think that might be because there's a huge interest and focus trading-wise in these sovereign spread stories in Europe, because you have this supposed Hamilton moment in Europe where they've decided to go a bit more all-in on mutual defense on budgets, and ECB is reallocating its purchases more to the periphery than it was before. So you've got a big yield spread trade to do in Europe, which that trade doesn't even exist in Japan. And you've got some perspective here on slide seven on the relative performance of these peripheral bonds, which has been absolutely spectacular this year.
Absolutely.
Or at least since the COVID, especially, of course, since the COVID-19 crisis.
But even if we take the beginning of the year until today, what we see is that the best performers in European sovereigns are Greece and Italy.
Yeah.
And it's quite surprising to see Italy being like the second best performer, because we know that they have deep economic problems. And on the top of it, they were the nation that were most hardly hit by the COVID-19 pandemic. We believe that there is still a lot for them to run. Just, John, just to make you a very quick example, if you were buying the new Italian BTP coming out at the beginning of June with 10 years maturities, by now, if you were selling it, it would have already made 8% from your initial investment, which is quite significant. I personally prefer, even though Greek sovereigns have rallied more than Italian sovereigns, I prefer Italian sovereigns for the simple fact that they are more liquid than Greek sovereigns. So if there is another liquidity test, which might come with a second wave of coronavirus, investors have more flexibility in Italian BTPs. If we look at slide number eight, I'm looking at Italian BTP and I'm trying to compare them with Spanish and Portuguese sovereigns. I'm taking the 30-year BTPs because they look actually cheaper compared to the 10-year sovereigns. What we can see here is that 30 years Italian BTP are trading considerably cheaper than Spanish and Portuguese sovereigns. And I believe that there is a reason to see more tightening in the spread between BTP and Bund from now until the end of the year. And we might see the 30-year BTPs even falling below 1% in yield, and the 10 years BTP spread between the BTP and the Bund falling below 90 basis points, which is basically a record ever low we ever seen, right, in the history of.
and that's just so interesting as well. Yeah, we talked about the two things earlier in this week. I think it was yesterday, actually. I spoke about it, what you pointed out, actually, that they did this 3-year issuance at zero yield, and yeah, that issue was oversubscribed, and then pointing out that the 10-year nominal interest rate in Italy has now slipped below 70 basis points. Interesting to see as well, and speaking of Europe, the EU summit unfolding today and wrapping up tomorrow to see if there's any strong message on the recovery fund and the fiscal side of things, which I think is going to dominate the focus for the European recovery next year. And then let's get to actually one more, a couple of news items. I think one of the reasons we're seeing a bit of wobbly sentiment in the U.S. is we're concerned, or the market is concerned, that the stimulus hopes are fading somewhat. We'll have to keep abreast of that. But the issue is not just the level of spending, but how Trump wants to spend it versus how the House Democrats want to spend the funds, as well the Republicans dragging their heels somewhat on the size. It's a bit of a mess, but it does appear that those hopes are fading, and it gets to be ugly if that is the case, because some of these programs run out at the end of the year and you don't have a new administration until late January. So we still need to stay on top of this issue for the risk of a dip in the economy, especially with COVID numbers resurging. And on the COVID resurging front, France actually announcing a proper curfew for the greater Paris metro area. And I think it was 8 or 9 other major cities across France where essentially people are not allowed to go out from the evening until the morning. And saying that they'll actually tighten measures further if the virus numbers aren't coming down considerably in the space of 10 days. So this is having real economic impact now with these with this resurgence level. And then on a calendar, slide 9, we have that again, the summit, EU summit kicking in gear today, wrapping up tomorrow. Got a few interesting things. The Hungarian rate announcement, the story very interesting there around the signaling from that central bank when their real interest rates are becoming an issue again, if that CPI starts to head back higher again. The weekly claims out of the U.S., a very interesting one, and the first of the regional manufacturing surveys, as well as, if you're trading energy, natural gas, weekly storage, and then the DOE numbers out of the U.S. We saw a very big draw on the API numbers yesterday, and oil is popping up in some interesting levels towards the range highs there, so be aware of that as we head into that weekly report, which is a day delayed because of the Monday holiday in the U.S. A couple of central bank speakers out as well. And then we have Friday tomorrow, I think, an interesting one, of course, the September retail sales, to see what the level of spending is now that some of that initial stimulus cash has been fading badly since the 1st of August, to see if that's filtering through into some of these retail sales numbers in the U.S. For now, I think we'll call it a day, and we will be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call. For today, thanks for joining.